You're listening to Beamercast number 5. It's September 7th, 2009. We are back this week. We took a week off, and we wanted to take a breather, I guess. I know, Michael, you had to get up to Canada, to the Great White North, and check out the M3s go around a track not so well.
Not so well this past race. Some difficulty during the race, but before the race, they were beautiful.
Yeah. Well, that's half the battle. Well, actually, it's not, but... I have to say that I am constantly jealous of the motorsport that you're getting. I think that's fantastic. And as much as the last race was really a big disappointment, you know, it is great to have BMW back in ALMS. I mean, you know, racing GT2, seeing them go head-to-head with the Corvettes, with the Porsches, it's just nice to have them back there.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, spending some time at Mosport, I went camping there and got to spend some time with the local people there at the campsite and, you know, drinking some good adult beverage and talking about cars. And they're just ecstatic that BMW is back on the track and, you know, doing fairly well, qualifying 1-2. And they seem to have it down pat until, you know, race day. But I will be honest, the weather was... It was really iffy the whole weekend. It was sunny, then it was cloudy, then it was pouring, then it was cold, and it was just there was a lot of variables going on. Even up until race time, I mean, teams lined up stacks of tires mm-hmm. along the wall. You know, when they're doing the pre-race ceremony, getting ready to figure out which tires they were going to put on. It was really interesting to see that mm-hmm. too.
It is interesting. So now this is a stupid question, but I'll just go ahead and ask because that is what I do. Dunlop is the provider of tires for the M3s. Do they provide tires for the other models in GT2?
In GT2, I believe that the M3s are the only cars. Don't quote me on that. But Dunlop is a developmental partner with Ray Hall Letterman and BMW for that car. Mm-hmm. And they send their engineers and their tire guys there, and they do a lot of work on the sides there. And and most of the other cars are running Michelins at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I thought. I mean, I know Porsche does pretty much exclusively. So it's interesting. Obviously, you live and die by the sword, so to speak, when you're running a unique tire combination.
Yeah, no, absolutely. They are definitely, you know, battling uphill, I guess you could say, with Michelin, because Michelin has more experience going into this. Mm-hmm. Dunlop is doing, you know, a great job, and they are putting a lot of effort into the tires, and there's a lot of communication between, you know, both sets of all the engineers. There's so many engineers on this team.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And things would have been a lot different with you know, if we didn't have the mechanical issue on the one car with the looked like an oil issue from the smoke from the engine, and then the other car getting hit by the flying lizard there when it was checking up into that turn.
Yeah, it's a shame. So we are we're getting close to Frankfurt, and as some of you know, Frankfurt this year is going to be relatively big for BMW. But they went ahead and released, I think, what is really going to be considered the star of the show this year, and that is the Vision Efficient Dynamics concept. I think that's the official name.
Yes, that's it. The VED, the Vision Efficient Dynamics concept. They had a Vision concept a few years ago, which was the X5, which was also a diesel hybrid.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's a lot to talk about, and I want to kind of run the gamut. We started off with motorsport, and there's a lot of aspects to BMW, obviously, as a brand. So I want to touch on a few things this show. But I think the biggest really, you know, the biggest news is really this new concept and all the little bits and pieces of technology that it really shows, and the way it foreshadows how BMW is going to be using that technology in the years ahead.
Yeah, lots of power, lots of driving prowess and high efficiency. That's what they're going with.
So it's interesting. I mean, we talked about this, I can't remember, a few weeks ago. BMW can clearly, you know, lay claim to being an efficient automaker, despite all the power. Obviously, they no question, there's a performance image to uphold. But they don't really go down that road, so to speak. I mean, they have their 1.8 liter turbo diesels and these engines that get phenomenal gas mileage. But you know, BMW, I think, doesn't, and perhaps rightly so. They don't really speak loudly about those all the time. I mean, what they want is they want this performance image. And I think this car does it pretty well.
Yeah, you're right. Absolutely. I'm sure they could have gotten the same mileage with a smaller output motor, but you're not going to have that performance number and all the driving and experience, you know, the ultimate driving machine that BMW stands for.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a fascinating concept in that, number one, I think it was a week or two ago, we specifically said that the diesel hybrid, you just will not see it because the market is so small. So seeing this car, it's a diesel hybrid. Does this mean that we're going to see a diesel hybrid, or is this just purely just for show?
I mean, it's something that they've done in the past, the diesel hybrid. I'm just, in my viewpoint and the people that I've discussed things with on the inside, I guess you could say, have clearly stated that, you know, they're having a hard enough time getting into the diesel market, let alone the diesel and the hybrid market, because you have the price delta for a diesel and then you're going to have a price delta for a hybrid. So the car is going to cost a significant amount more compared to a regular, you know, internal combustion engine at this time.
Mm-hmm. So I mean, and it's a shame. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of different considerations. I mean, even down to what the largest BMW market in the world, the U.S., I mean, what they actually will buy. So, I mean, on the face of it, it makes a lot of sense. But the interesting thing is you've got two electric engines, one in the front, one in the back, coupled with this diesel power plant. And it's not so much the power, although that is impressive. There's no question about it. But it's the torque of this thing that is just mind-boggling. I mean, I am trying to think of any car that is, you know, outside of a sort of a standard diesel or petrol power plant that has anything close to this, any hybrid, any electric car. I can't think of anything.
It's pretty sensational almost. It's something you just dream of.
Well, and to be specific, the Vision concept has 351 horsepower and 590 foot-pound of torque. 590 foot-pound. I mean, that is akin to a V10 Touareg diesel. Or, I mean, you know, it's more than, I can't think of any supercar that has more torque. I'm sure there's a couple out there, but I cannot think of any off the top of my head.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's for stump pulling. You're going to be able to pull your house behind it. It's you know, and still do real fast. And you know, and they use a lot of other great technologies that we're going to see on, you know, with the new introduction of the lower drag coefficients. We're going to start seeing more of that with the Munich wind tunnel playing an important role in that.
Yeah, so this is the big star of the show. We had talked about other cars popping up, though. The Z2 was the one that everybody was really waiting for, a concept version of an eventual Speedster and Coupe, very similar, you might say, to the Speedster and Coupe that Mini just showed off. What happened to that? Is it going to happen? Are we going to see it? And if not, when?
Well, from what I gather, it happened. There's a car. And I'm not sure if they're going to show it. I think they want to focus mainly on this car, which has bits and pieces of the future of BMW in it.
Mm-hmm. To me, it makes a lot of sense to show that Z2 in LA. When you think about it, I mean, LA is obviously a big consumer show for the American market. Roadsters have always been relatively big here. It just sort of makes sense for a bunch of Germans to bring a roadster to a show in California.
True, true, absolutely. And I, coming back and looking back, and where I don't recall where the Z4 was introduced, but I feel like it was in LA as well. The original, the coupe, the Z4 coupe, I believe, was in LA, but that's my mind thinking. I'm not sure if that's accurate.
Yeah, I don't know. I cannot recall off the top of my head. But it is interesting. So, I mean, basically, we're looking at this Vision as a introduction. We've got the Mini Coupe and Speedster, which is on the Mini stand. What else from BMW are we actually going to expect? I mean, we've got the world premieres of the, or I should say, the public debut of the 7 Series V12 and some specific models like that. What else?
Are you going to have the 7 series with the X drive, and both hybrids will be making their debuts as well, in production form, as well as the GT, the Fiver GT will be making its production form debut, and also the X1 will be making its production form debut.
So it's becoming clear to me that BMW has really made and gone out of their way even to make Frankfurt all about efficiency and sustainability.
That's what they're, pushing going forward, is that they want this efficient dynamics to be corporate-wide. It's not just a single model of, Toyota with its Prius, and, keeping that system in one car for a long time and then moving it to others. They want the efficient dynamics moniker, I guess you could call it, throughout the entire line. And it also shows that BMW continues to reduce its greenhouse gas emissions per vehicle, and they're also extremely sustainable in production, which not very many people think about.
Yeah, it's actually interesting. I mean, they were just named yesterday for the 5th year in a row, I believe, the most sustainable automaker in the world. So there's certainly a lot to hang your hat on if you're BMW in terms of what they've done, what they're going to be doing. And you're right in terms of them being really a varied, I mean, using a lot of different technology in various ways. And Toyota is very successful at the one thing they do. Now, granted, they do have different hybrid systems out there, but it's not necessarily about performance. I mean, Toyota never is. It's strictly about efficiency or very light efficiency in the case of some Lexus hybrids.
Exactly, and I BMW chose not to go that route, and I personally think that's where the brand stands. It's the ultimate driving machine, and as soon as you take that away, you're left with everything else. And how does it separate itself?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So that is Frankfurt, I suppose. I mean, we're going to be seeing a lot of Frankfurt coming up. I mean, we've got about, what, 3 weeks until the show starts. So look for obviously a ton of articles. We're going to have some live photos from the show. So just lots of stuff coming up in general.
Yeah, it's going to be an experience, and who knows, they could throw us a curveball and throw us a surprise. They've been doing that lately.
Yeah, that's true. That's absolutely true. Really quick, F1, BMW, I know they're on their way out, but good race in Spa, which is probably my favorite track on the F1 calendar. Nick Heidfeld came in third and looked pretty good. The car was fairly strong, and I think it's obviously good for the team. I mean, they're looking for a buyer at this point, so any little bit helps.
Yeah, I think they were 4 or 5.
Oh,
I'm
you're
could.
right. You're absolutely right.
He was qualified third, but the funny part was, I was talking to somebody about this race. I got to catch it actually at Mosport, and it was interesting to see because the drivers now are actually racing for their jobs. They need to get signed by somebody else, so they're actually pushing the envelope more in these races. Since BMW announced we're not going to be in this anymore. And there's a little bit less whining and complaining going on. And that was always my thing with Kubica and Heidfeld. They whined and complained. I mean, they're driving a car that is very expensive, has a lot of engineering into it, and they're paid to drive,
Well, not
and they
only are they paid to
always.
drive, but they're getting catered lunches and dinners. I mean,
Yeah.
that in itself, I mean, You shouldn't be complaining about anything.
No, absolutely. And they would find the slightest thing to moan about and complain and saying the team's not doing this and the team's not doing that. And then you look down the rest of the line, you don't hear that from anyone else. So,
well, I think the one thing that opened my eyes is Fisichella, who raced for Force India. The minute that there was a rumor of Ferrari being interested in him taking over Felipe Massa's job through the end of the year, he sprang to life and became, I mean, you know, 4 or 5 times better than he ever was. I mean, it was just alarming almost to see the transformation.
Yeah, it's actually sad too. It's sad. I mean, they're at the top of their field, I guess you could say, and yet they're just going out and not giving it their all. Or I think it's also F1's become really soft. I mean, from a fan standpoint, yeah, that we have our diehard niche fans here in the US, but I mean, most of the people you see are people that just tout it.
Yeah, you're suggesting that, you know, there should be like the running start, like Le Mans, or here's, you know, I think the better way to do it would be the top three finishers get their, you know, get their podium, and then the rest of the field has to arm wrestle for the remaining points.
Or who could chug a beer the fastest? Yeah, something along those lines.
I would say those.
After the race.
I don't know if you've ever seen the photos of Michael Schumacher like destroying the post race like room or something after one of his many victories with like beer in hand. But I have a feeling those guys can party.
Yeah, but now I think they're drinking like Dom Perignon rather than drinking a beer.
That may be true. So last week, or I should say 2 weeks ago, when we last had our Bimmercast, I threw out the question: what M car would you have if you could have any built before 1998? So that basically meant any M car pre E39 M5, which is the one I think you and I would certainly have our eye on.
That would be it.
So, I mean, so basically take that out of it. My answer was E34 M5, just because I think it's a classic shape. I love the engine. And I certainly waver on that. I mean, the E30 is probably my favorite, but I guess I'm trying to be practical.
Yeah, and I went with the, what did I go, E36 M3 four-door, right? Yeah, I think that's what I went. That would be my bet. It's got to have four doors for me. I'm just a practicality standpoint, because I'm driving this thing. I'm not going to just put it in a parking lot and everybody stare at it.
So I'm going to throw out another question, and this is clearly you start to see the consistency here I've got. But what BMW non M car would you choose pre 1998? We're going to keep that time frame. If you could choose any, so you know, start from the 2002s, 2002 TII, all the way to you know, I mean, E36 325IS.
I would
I'm
actually
put you on the spot. I want to say that we did not talk about this before, so
we definitely didn't. I mean, if we're going back for non M car, I mean, I think I would go something with like one of the early cars. You know, one of the
what, a 507.
Yeah, something like that. I really would. I just love that.
Yeah, I completely hear you. Although I think I would have to choose the 2002 turbo, and it's only because it seems to be such a hair-raising car. I mean, I don't know if you've ever looked at the photo in our podcast or the photo on our Twitter account, but it's my favorite press photo from BMW of all time. It's a 2002 turbo. It's clearly taken back in the early 70s. The guy's got a mustache and he's got shades. In fact, I mean, it's actually looks pretty hip right now. But he is manhandling this thing. He's inches away from going off the going off the course. He's clearly got opposite lock going. And if you look very closely, he's not wearing a seatbelt. And to me, it's just, you know, that car just epitomizes that sort of hairy-chested, sort of like, I don't know, brawny vibe that, you know, BMW is, I mean, I don't know if they've lost it, but they aren't as in touch with it as they used to be, perhaps. And what automaker really is these days?
Yeah, that car, goes like Schnell, right? Is that was the moniker back then?
I think it
Yeah.
was, and it's a good one. So that would be my first choice. Second choice would have to be the 535IS, the E28.
E28. Wow.
Or wait, I'm sorry. Is that right? Or is
Yeah,
it?
yeah. That's
Oh,
a
that's
that's
right, yeah.
from yeah, 81 through 88. Yeah.
Yeah, the 535IS was basically an M5 without the M5 engine. So it was a little bit easier to maintain, but I had the M5 suspension. I'm sort of paraphrasing a little bit here. Interior, exterior was a little unique. Just a phenomenal car. And I've always liked that 5 series quite a bit.
Yeah, no, I think like you were saying with the 2002 TII though, that's a sweet car. That really is in every form, especially though everything in the front's, reverse. So when people are looking in their mirror, they see what's coming up. I think that's just
Oh, the
classic.
turbo, you mean?
Oh yeah, the
Yeah,
turbo. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
yeah. No, I know. It's really pretty funny. The fact that they put that on the car, I mean, somebody had a sense of humor.
Definitely had a sense of humor, and that's just a different styling era. That was a great time. That was a great period, and across all brand lines. That's before we end up with all these safety things, that get in the way and add this n unnecessary weight.
No, it's true. It's absolutely true. I mean, the 2002 Turbo was just it was kind of a monster in a way. I mean, it in as much a small, four-cylinder German car could be. But, really, I mean, when you think about it, I've heard it was the very first mass-produced turbo. I don't know if that's necessarily true or not, but regardless, I mean, it was certainly one of the first. And it's really kind of interesting to think about BMW being involved in that so far back, and seeing them get so heavily back into, turbocharging the cars again.
Yeah, I remember, when the N54 came out and everyone said it was the end of BMW because they're going turbo, and BMW's had turbos in its roots early on, and they kind of were pioneers then, they're pioneers now, and things going forward, it's going to be interesting with the new motors that'll be coming out.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the tri-turbos and all sorts of things.
Yeah, tri-turbos and then the new N55, which we will see in the spring, with a single turbo and the Valvetronic system, which will put out about the same power and torque as the N54 with more efficiency.
And I would assume less weight, too.
Less weight, and there's a couple other tricks that we'll go into more detail later, but less weight and actually better throttle response from it due to the more advanced plumbing that'll be in there and the twin scroll turbo.
Are we going to what car are we going to see that on?
Well, we'll definitely see that on the GT. And we'll also see that in the 5 series. And more than likely, it will probably be in the X5.
Yeah, that's the one that is sort of lagging behind right now. And obviously you've got the X5 refresh coming up relatively
Yes.
soon. So that could be something that we see over the next few months in an auto show, perhaps.
Yes, and as we know, BMW likes to introduce things in either a refresh or in a new model launch, and that's, they kind of hold things for one or the other, so they get more bang for their marketing dollar, which is smart and efficient. So that's that, and we'll also see the introduction throughout the line moving forward of the LED coronas or halos and some possible other applications of LED lighting.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of interested in what BMW does with LED lighting, because I mean, clearly the rear, the taillights, the turn signals, all that stuff. But seeing the coronas or angel eyes, as LEDs, I've seen some photos. It just looks fantastic. But what else would BMW do? I mean, you've got the potential to sort of have that slant, or slimmer version of the coronas. And what you see in the vision concept, for instance. But outside of that sort of form language, where else would it go on the car?
Oh, you could do low beams.
No, that's a good point. I mean, that's interesting. When you really think about it, there's no reason for almost any BMW to have the center lights. You know, you've got four headlights up front.
Correct. Yeah, the
And
middle lights are, yeah,
these
they're
days, I
just set.
mean, yeah, it doesn't even matter. I mean, the xenons are bi-xenons. Even the halogens, I think, are the brights are contained within, aren't they?
Yes, they are. And actually, on the X1, if my memory serves me correctly, there's a if you look at the X1 lights, the interior, the inner lights, the inner two, actually have like a square reflector in them, which actually just bounces the light from the light bulb to the angel eyes, and that's the only purpose of those. Which the X1 actually just started or is starting production either this week. As when this airs, or had started the prior week.
Interesting. It's
So,
gonna be interesting to start to see this thing actually get out and start to read some of the reviews. I mean, some more formal reviews than we've seen already. Thanks for joining us this week for BeamerCast number 5. Next week we are going to be back, and we're going to have a couple of guests from BMW in the following episodes, following weeks as well. So look for that. Obviously, we've got Frankfurt coming up, so we're going to have a lot of coverage there. And as usual, we have the daily news and everything that comes with it. If you are interested in sponsoring BeamerCast, we are starting that program up. So get a hold of us via our contact link on beamerfile.com. Otherwise, questions, comments, concerns, input, anything, same link. The contact on beamerfile.com is there for you to talk back to us. If you have any suggestions on subjects, questions, anything, let us know. So this is Gabe, and for Michael, we bid you goodbye.